Welcome to the longest running real estate talk show in the North Bay, The Real Estate Hour with Mike Kelly. Mike is here every Sunday morning at 9 with tips on buying and selling your home, information on the loans to look for and the ones to avoid. Throughout the Real Estate Hour, call in and ask your questions direct to Mike. And now, the man whose first words were location, location, location. Here's Mike Kelly.
Good morning. Well, as you can tell, or maybe you can't, I am not Mike Kelly. I am subbing in for Mike. My name is Keith Becker, and I am the general manager and property manager at DD's Rentals here in Santa Rosa. The reason that I'm here today rather than Mike is because he's up in the Trinity Mountains fishing. So next week when he returns, we should have plenty, plenty of fish tales. In Mike's absence, we've got this big. We've got still lots of activity going on. As you can tell, we, even in his absence, we cover Mike's radio show, and there are a couple of different open houses for Mike's listings that are still going to go on today, even while he's off fishing. All of them are today from 1 o'clock till 4 o'clock. The newest listing is at 2929 West Creek Lane in Southwest Santa Rosa. It's a 4-bedroom, 3-bath, 2200 square foot corner lot, which abuts the open space down in North Point Village area. That listing is $595,000. The second listing, the second open house, is at 2417 Grace Drive. This is an unusual 1,300 square foot, 80 square foot building, 8,200 square foot lot, and it has no kitchen. Right now, it's classified as a fixer, but it does have an 80% loan-to-value financing from Community First Union, so you can save your money up front, put in the new kitchen, and then refinance once the kitchen is in. Megan Lane is going to be hosting that listing. The third open house is at 12789, that's 12,789, 12789 Grayton Road. It's 3.5 acres. $1,165,000. It's a remodeled home. It was built about 1904. It was once a stagecoach stop, and then it was a speakeasy, and rumor has it that at one point it was also a brothel. There's a button for that, right? When I cough, there's a button. So if you want a house with character, this is the place. It's gorgeous. Redwood Grove, the creek runs through the property. Lorna Korak will be hosting that open house. So Mike was actually, Joe, did you notice Mike was in the newspaper on Tuesday?
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, seller's market softens. Now, this is the headline. It does say seller's market softens, and a big picture of one of the properties that Mike has listed. It's still classified as a seller's market. This is not suddenly defined as a buyer's market. But the sale market is selling. Properties are staying on the market longer. There are fewer bids and offers over asking price. Owners are having to reduce prices, and properties are staying on the market longer than they would have and did even 6 months ago. So the market is starting to turn. And what's interesting is we're starting to see something similar on the rental side. The inventory of rental is the inventory of rental properties is increasing. Rents are starting to moderate. And whereas something we might have listed, 4 months, 5 months ago, we might have listed it at 27, we're now looking at the same property and listing it at 25, which is still actually, in most instances, substantially more than what it was listing for 3 or 4 years ago, but it's no longer really, it's not wise to be pricing properties at a premium because we're coming into the quieter time of the year. Furthermore, in addition to being competitive and smart about the price that you charge, we also are looking at making sure that our properties look as pretty as we can make them, because price and appearance both matter in this market. Everything's subject to change. The sale market, the rental market, everything is fluctuating. The only constant, as they say, is change, which is, once again, that's why I'm here this morning. And with me this morning is a guest and a very good friend of mine, Michelle Zaromski. She is an attorney. She's been my attorney for nearly a decade. I've worked with you and Kevin.
It's been a long time.
Yes. Michelle, tell me, okay, so the firm is Zaromski Konasek. and you operate, you're here in Santa Rosa.
Yes, my husband Kevin and I, we have our law firm in downtown Santa Rosa. We do a lot of business litigation, we do real estate law, and an offshoot of that is our landlord-tenant practice. So we work with all kinds of landlords, residential, commercial, apartments, houses, multifamily, low-income, and we see a lot of different situations.
In your experience, have you seen, here we are talking about the market changing and we're no longer seemingly at the peak of the market. Are you seeing a change this fast, or does it take longer to start seeing impact of how the market changes?
I think for what we've seen, it's going to take a little bit longer. There's still a lot of units that landlords are having an easy time finding tenants. People need places to rent. So I think the impacts of the fire are still being felt. I don't have a lot of clients who are having difficulty finding tenants. So I don't know if we're going to see that for a couple more months.
Well, why don't we start as far as... let me just start, Joe. Let's just start by saying that we do have a call-in line, and the phone number is 707-636-1350. So anybody who might want to call in certainly can, and ask questions if you so desire. You know, you've got the landlord and the lawyer here. So we're certainly taking phone calls. Until we do get people who call in and basically redirect whatever conversation we might have, I'd like to ask you if you might start by giving us some best practices. As a lawyer, you've dealt with a lot of landlords, you've dealt with a lot of landlord-tenant relationships, and what can landlords do as far as best practices to make themselves and protect themselves for the long haul?
Okay, so I think the thing that we look at initially is, what does your agreement with your tenant look like? And I think that might, you know, seem a little bit obvious, but I can tell you that there are a lot of problems that could be avoided if you start at the beginning and you set out your contract with your tenant as specifically as you can. And
so it should be in writing then.
It is preferable to have it in writing. It is. You can have a valid oral contract, and we've seen that before. And those agreements are valid, but they are very hard to enforce because you get into a he said, she said situation as opposed to having something in black and white that both sides can point to. So it's a matter of having your expectations laid out, and it's a contract. I mean, it is agreement. You're in a relationship here. So you need to have something that says what your rights and responsibilities are as the landlord and what your rights and responsibilities are as the tenant, because it is a two-way street here. So for us, what we look at, you know, one of the first questions that we ask is, where's your contract? What does your contract look like? There are landlords that have had properties for a long time and they're using outdated contracts, and those can be problematic also. So I think the first thing that we say is, where's your rental agreement?
So if you've got, let's start with, you've got a rental agreement. Now, what if I thought I was a really smart guy and just wrote my own contract from whole cloth and just made my own terms from stuff that just sounded smart, sensible? Is there a risk inherent with me just making something up rather than using a pre-formatted form or lease? And if you have, you know, pre-formatted leases, which ones are good?
I would recommend that you talk to a professional and that you ask for the forms that they use. There are different published forms out there. There's the CAA form, there's a CAR form. The problem with trying to do it yourself is that you might not be aware of the current laws that are out there that you are held responsible for as a landlord. So you could come up with things that you think are a good idea or make sense, and you could be wrong. So I would recommend that you talk to somebody about what things you need to have in there, both for your protection and then also for the tenant's protection as well.
So theoretically, if you are a professional landlord and you come up with a vacancy once every 2 or 3 or 5 years, and you have a rental contract that you've already vetted with your attorney previously, when you come up and have another vacancy, you simply want to make sure that the one that you've got already is still appropriate. You don't necessarily need to start over each and every time. Is that a fair statement?
That's true. Because there are things that pretty much stay the same, but then it's usually that there can be some minor detail that could trip you up. So it is a good idea to just get a little refresher and make sure that what you have is still going to work for you, and so that what you expect going into this is what will actually happen.
So theoretically, I'm an owner-operator, and I haven't had a vacancy for 2 or 3 years, and my tenant gives notice, and they move out, and I simply call and say, hey, Michelle, you know, I'm looking at my lease from 3 years ago that I last used. Is there anything that I should change, add, subtract, et cetera? You'd be able to help me do that, and then I can go forward based upon that.
Yes.
Okay. Other best practices. So we have a good, updated written contract.
So
okay, hold on. Joe just signaled me. Is it time?
Yeah.
Let's go to a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about more with Michelle Zaromsky.
The Real Estate Hour with Mike Kelly. Mike will be right back with more on KSRO.
The Drive with Steve Jackson.
If those payments were a crime for Michael Cohen, then why wouldn't they be a crime for Donald Trump? That's from Lanny Davis, our good friend, longtime Drive Hall of Famer.
Afternoons here on FM News Talk Radio, 103.5 and 94.5, KSRO.
If you're selling a home in Sonoma County, you know the fires have changed everything. It's more important than ever to have an agent who really knows the market. That's why you should call Mike Kelly.
It's a different landscape these days. You're dealing with insurance companies, lawyers, inspectors. I can help you get through all of this stuff and sell your home the right way with less hassle.
If you've been affected by the fires, you need the Mike Kelly difference. Let Mike use his Sonoma County resources and connections to get you through all the obstacles and his market knowledge to help you set the right price.
There'll be a lot of homes coming on the market, so now's the time to list yours. Show me your home and I'll show you 3 quick and easy tips to maximize the return on your investment, even if you don't use me.
If you want the Mike Kelly difference, you've got to call Mike. Find Mike at MikeKelly.com or call Mike at 707-322-8503, 707-322-8503.
Weather every 10 minutes mornings, every 30 minutes all the time on FM News Talk Radio, 103.5 FM and 94.5 FM, KSRO.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Hour with Mike Kelly on KSRO. Now, here's more with Mike.
And we're back. Hello, Michelle. Let's talk about some of the fundamentals. And every April, as a professional property manager, I and the other professionals that I work with, we actually go through training almost each and every year on fair housing. So it's wise when you're talking about providing rental properties that you do, as a landlord, know what the fair housing laws are and what the protected classes are. And I brought with me, and bear in mind, California is very proactive. So to some measure, if you're in compliance with California's fair housing laws, you're pretty much in compliance with any state anywhere, because we are the most inclusive in terms of making sure that all possible applicants and tenants are treated fairly and equally. And so there's a list. Those protected classes include race, color, religion, national origin, sex, disability, and I want to come back to disability in just a moment, Michelle. Disability, familial status, sexual orientation, gender identity, which is separate from sexual orientation. Gender identity is, for example, transgender. Marital status, whether you're single, married, or widowed, medical condition, ancestry, source of income, age, and something that does get included under the Fair Employment and Housing Act, but rarely seems to have any influence on housing, but it's genetic information. I think that that's more associated with employment. And then lastly is arbitrary discrimination. You cannot be discriminated against because you simply fall into some arbitrary group. For example, I do not rent to people who own motorcycles. That's arbitrary, but it is also, believe it or not, that is a protected class. Coming back to, and as I said, I wanted to talk about disabilities, Michelle. Disabilities and reasonable accommodations. Reasonable accommodations is something that may not necessarily be well understood. Can you explain, if you will, what reasonable accommodations mean, what they might be, and how should a landlord respond if they find themselves in such a situation?
Sure. So basically, when a tenant makes a request for a reasonable accommodation, they are asking the landlord to alter the landlord's practices in such a way so that the tenant can enjoy the benefits of the housing in the same way that the tenant would if he or she was not disabled. The most common example of this that we have seen does relate to somebody who has a mental or a physical disability and they need an animal, for example, so that they can use and enjoy the benefits of the housing in the same way as somebody who is not disabled could. There's also the structural modifications. So you might need a guardrail somewhere. You might need some, you know, something in the bathroom.
They want an entrance ramp to the front stair, to the front door, because you've got two steps up and they want an entrance ramp.
Right. And there's a process that the landlord and the tenant basically go through when the tenant wants to make a request for a reasonable accommodation.
And the process. So how complicated is the process and how strict is the compliance with the process? Imagine you've got a tenant who says that they want to put a ramp at the front door. As a responsible landlord, my presumption would be, okay, that's fine. That makes sense. You do it at your own expense. I, as the landlord, make sure that it's done properly and appropriately, that it's built properly, and I have the right to expect that you will remove it when you leave if it's practical to do so. Is that a fair and reasonable approach, or is there more to it?
Well, the responsibility is actually on the landlord to, if the disability, for example, is obvious, then the landlord does not get to ask the tenant what the disability is.
Tenant rolls in with a wheelchair. We presume it's a de facto somebody is disabled. You don't ask.
Right.
Okay.
And in that situation, and if it's not overly burdensome on the landlord, and if it would not require the landlord to change the landlord's practices in a way that would be overly burdensome, overly expensive, things like that, then the landlord needs to go ahead and accommodate the tenant by making the improvement for the tenant.
So the overly burdensome would be, and forgive me because I'm being frivolous here, so say the tenant says, I want to put an elevator in from the first to the second floor. That is wildly overly burdensome. If the tenant, however, says that I want to get a handrail in the shower, that should be presumed to be reasonable.
Yes, and the difficulty here is that there's really no bright line, and we are not provided with, for example, a dollar amount that over this amount of money is unreasonable. So it's a very gray area, and that presents the problems and the challenges that we see, because it is going to be expensive for the landlord. And so the question becomes, well, how expensive? Do you have to provide this in every single room, for example? So that's where we get to, you know, to kind of work with the situation. It's always a case-by-case basis. But the idea is that the landlord needs to do as much as possible to engage in the interactive process with the tenant and try to help the tenant so that the tenant can enjoy the benefits of the housing.
You said the interactive process, and that sounds like a law term. Is it possible that you actually do everything and you think that you do everything right and you still are in trouble because you didn't actually go through the interactive process as a process?
You need to go through the interactive process. If you have a tenant and the tenant is insisting on talking with you, on asking you to explore the different possibilities, explore the accommodation that the tenant is requesting, then yes, you definitely do need to engage in a back and forth with the tenant. You can explore alternatives. I mean, there might be ways. You might have a doctor who says, well, this is an alternative to what the tenant is really asking for. And then you could explore, is this a way, you know, would this satisfy your needs? And so it is a process. And you can't just sort of think that it's going to happen in one phone call or one, you know, exchange of emails or something like that. So you do have to take these things seriously.
Speaking of taking things seriously, you did mention in passing early in this little conversation about animals. And we, as housing providers, want to take this seriously. At the same time, about 6 weeks ago, I saw an article about somebody wanting to take their ostrich on an airplane, and it was an assistance ostrich. There was a different article I read 2 days ago about a 12-year-old autistic boy who had 4 therapy ducks. As it relates to assistance slash, and there's so many different terms, it seems, therapy, assistance, companion, service, that seems to be a real complicated and challenging area as it relates to the law, as it relates to what qualifies as a pet versus one of these types of animals. How challenging is that actually for you as an attorney?
There are a lot of different situations, and I would say it is challenging because the laws are designed to help the tenants, and the landlords need to make sure that they are taking these requests seriously. There are things that you can ask. There are things that you cannot ask. You need to make sure that you know what those are. You need to make sure that you're asking for the right things. It's fine to ask. If you get a letter from a tenant who is making a reasonable accommodation request, and I will say that, first of all, you don't need to make a reasonable accommodation if you haven't been asked. We've had this situation before. So a landlord thinks that maybe this could be useful for a tenant, but under the law, unless the tenant asks for one, you're not obligated to provide a reasonable accommodation. So they make a formal reasonable accommodation request to you, and you are allowed to ask for a verification from a medical provider about the connection between the disability, whatever that might be, and the need for this particular animal. I mean, we have had situations where there are several people, for example, in an apartment, and we have seen letters from different medical providers that each person in the family needs an animal for a different disability, and basically you have to go through the interactive process on each of those requests.
So if somebody, let's just say they have a certificate, they have a document, but it's not from a medical provider per se. Let's just say it's one of those situations where I could get it online. Is that enough?
Depends on what it says, and you probably want to be safer than sorry as a landlord, and it's up to you whether you want to risk getting a fair housing lawsuit on that one.
Okay, we're going to come back after a break.
The Real Estate Hour with Mike Kelly. Mike will be right back with more on KSLM.
President George W. Bush will deliver a eulogy at the funeral of Senator John McCain. A spokesman for the 43rd president tells ABC, Bush is honored to have been asked to speak. ABC's Alex Stone has more on funeral plans for the senator who died Saturday at 81.
John McCain's body is at a funeral home today here in Phoenix, where it was driven last night with a police escort. At some point in the coming days, he will lie in state at the Arizona State Capitol. After that, there will be a funeral service here in Phoenix before his body is flown to Washington, D.C. to lie in state and for a funeral. He'll be buried at the Naval Academy Cemetery in Annapolis.
Arizona Governor Doug Ducey says he won't name a replacement for McCain in the Senate until after he's buried. Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer wants to rename a Senate office building after McCain.
Picking a replacement for John McCain's body is it a...
He said it would be more appropriate to name a building after McCain than the current name, Senator Richard Russell. Brian Clark, ABC News.
FM News Talk Radio. North County 103.5. South County 94.5. KSRO.
If you're selling a home in Sonoma County, you know the fires have changed everything. It's more important than ever to have an agent who really knows the market. That's why you should call Mike Kelly.
It's a different landscape these days. You're dealing with insurance companies, lawyers, inspectors. I can help you get through all of this stuff and sell your home the right way with less hassle.
If you've been affected by the fires, you need the Mike Kelly difference. Let Mike use his Sonoma County resources and connections to get you through all the obstacles and his market knowledge to help you set the right price.
There'll be a lot of homes coming on the market, so now's the time to list yours. Show me your home and I'll show you three quick and easy tips to maximize the return on your investment, even if you don't use me.
If you want the Mike Kelly difference, you've got to call Mike. Find Mike at MikeKelly.com or call Mike at 707-322-8503. 707-322-8503.
Sonoma County's most accurate, dependable forecast with KSRO's Daniel Trucios.
Clouds coming and going to start off the week. Today, topping out at 77, 61 on the coast. A few clouds tonight, low 51, 52 on the shores. Still more clouds for Monday at 76, 63 in Bodega Bay. Tuesday, still partly cloudy at 72, 63 on the coastline. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5. KSRO.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Hour with Mike Kelly on KSRO. Now, here's more with Mike.
Good morning. Good morning. This is Keith Becker, and I'm actually subbing for Mike today because he's up in the mountains fishing. Here we are on KSRO, Sonoma County's News Talk at 103.5 FM or 1350 AM. Sonoma County's FM News Talk. I'm here this morning with Michelle Zoromsky of Zoromsky Konasek Law Firm, and we're talking about landlord-tenant stuff. I've been doing this for seemingly 25 years. You're not quite as old as me, so probably not 20. How many years have you been doing this?
20.
Okay. I got a few years on you. I look older. And we were talking previously about assistance animals. We were talking about applications and leases. And so many times, anytime you talk to an attorney, it appears that the answer to any question is, it depends. Because there are so many moving parts and so many changes and so many circumstances under which things can be different. So it is, in my opinion, very wise to make sure that you've got a very good attorney and you have them on speed dial so that in the event you have a question, you can call them. And Michelle, we're going to ask before we wrap up today how somebody might contact you if they want to employ you, Kevin, employ the company, have questions, or basically just want to keep themselves out of trouble. Here's the next trouble topic. How do you keep yourself out of trouble? Michelle, habitability means something very specific to landlords and tenants. We only have a half hour, Michelle. What does habitability mean?
So in California, there are specific laws that discuss what habitability or tenantability means. And just as a generalization, the landlord is required to keep the premises in a habitable condition, meaning the electricity works, the heating works, the plumbing works, there are locks on the doors, there is no garbage strewn around, there are no vermin outside or inside the property. And so this is an area that can be fraught with pitfalls because the tenants are allowed in California to withhold rent if the premises are not tenantable. And so a lot of what we do is advise landlords who call in or come in and they have questions about habitability, what they need to do. Going back to what I had said before with respect to your agreement and your rental agreement, it's very, very important that in your rental agreement, in writing, you as a landlord spell out what the tenant needs to do as far as maintaining the property in a safe and clean condition, because both the landlord and the tenants do have responsibilities to maintain the property. We have seen situations where the tenants keep the property in a pretty ugly, pretty nasty, pretty dirty condition, and the landlord has to deal with that. With respect to habitability, it's really, really important that the landlord be proactive. If the tenant calls the landlord and has a complaint that the heat is not working or that there's a leak, and, you know, after the hard rain that we had two winters ago, we did see a lot more where there were leaks because we had so much rain. And I would say the number one thing for a landlord to do if you have a call from a tenant is be proactive when it comes to habitability, because the risks to you are great.
Let's jump into the deep end of this pool here. And what the heck? Let's talk about mold.
Okay.
And you're talking about the rental contracts. And in our rental contracts, we actually do include the California Apartment Association disclosure as it relates to mold. Because there's mold here. There's right. mold everywhere. Mold
right.
is not itself the issue. It is the issue of what type and at what severity. And mold can develop as a result of basic house cleaning or lack of house cleaning. You do find it that, you know, the orange stuff grows on the tile in the shower if you don't clean up. That is, yes, it's mold, but does that constitute a habitability issue? Probably not. However, a tenant who calls and says, and this is our approach, a tenant who calls and says, I've got mold, we take the approach where we immediately sort of escalate it. And the escalation is a tenant who says, I've got mold, we go out and we actually bring one of our independent vendors with us to look at it and take the approach of saying, okay, we're going to investigate this because it is better from my perspective, from our perspective, to go out and take the action and realize that it wasn't necessary, then to minimize it and have it come back later and be like, we were notified of something, we didn't do it, and it is now a huge, massive, ugly problem.
Right, and things have a reasonableness component too. So if you can show as the landlord that you did exactly what you were just talking about, that you addressed it right away, that you took a professional out there who evaluated and cleaned right away, you are going to save yourself some massive headaches down the road. And what you had also said as far as having something in writing, a mold addendum to your rental agreement that says, tenant, you need to clean things, you need to keep things ventilated. Don't put up curtains that block all light. Don't, you know, you have to keep your windows open. You have to run the fan in the bathroom. So if you have those things, and then if you get a call and you respond immediately and you have a paper trail that shows that I did all of these things right after I got the call, then I think you're in a lot better position than somebody who either doesn't go out, doesn't take it seriously, and and sloughs it off on the tenant. So even if it eventually it can be shown that this was the tenant-caused problem, if you take the first steps and you go out and you test and you remediate, then you're going to be fine. You're going to be in a much better position than somebody who didn't do all of that. So that's I think, you know, maybe you've learned that from experience the hard way. Or
45, everything. Everything is lessons learned.
Yeah.
And the hope and the expectation is basically you learn your lesson faster than they chase you. You were just mentioning about what, you know, that sometimes things are tenant related or tenant caused. And my approach and expectation and the tact we take is that, and tell me if I'm wrong, it is presumed that you as a landlord are expected to, for practical purposes, know the condition of your property. Even if you don't, I have owners that I don't manage for, but they come to me when, you know, they have problems sometimes. And they say, you know, I haven't been into my property for 4 years and my tenant just told me this. And I don't know why they didn't tell me this 2.5 years ago, but now I'm dealing with this. If an owner does not know about an existing problem because the tenant doesn't tell them, is that actually defensible, or does an owner have a responsibility to see their property on a regular basis?
I would say both. There is law, and the case law says that the landlord is not responsible for a problem that the landlord is not notified about. But it is much more difficult to be on the back end of that argument and trying to defend yourself with that argument. If you are a proactive landlord and you have someone such as yourself, somebody is monitoring the condition of the property, somebody who can see what's going on there, can see what the tenants are doing, can see who's coming and going, let's say, and that you stay on top of things, you are going to be in a much better position than somebody who just sort of turns a blind eye and doesn't know. So I think the answer to that question is that both things are correct, but you want to be proactive. And I know it sounds maybe common sense, but it's hard to do. I mean, people are busy. They don't have time perhaps to go, you know, and do what they think is going to take some time. But again, it's better to do it on the front end than to have to do damage control. And that can be very, very long, drawn out, and painful.
And damage control, actually, it is, we have it written into our rental contract that the tenants, and I guess that we need to recognize, tenants are wary of reporting problems because many, and I'm going to say that this is unjustly, but many tenants believe that if they report problems with the property, that we, or the landlord, is going to raise the rents because they're reporting problems. And my attitude is basically, you know, if rents are warranted and justified to be raised, they get raised whether or not, you know, a tenant has reported problems. Tenants are expected and requested and required to report problems because they are entitled to a safe, secure, and appropriately maintained house. And especially, for example, when we're talking about bathrooms. Bathrooms are a constant source of problem because it is nothing but running water between sinks and toilets and showers, and the wax seal fails on the toilet, and down at the lower corner of the bathtub shower you find where there's water in the corner because water escapes from over the edge of the tub, and it is a whole lot easier for me as the landlord to be able to deal with a small section of the corner of the lino that's starting to turn gray than something that basically has been sitting for 2 years and has softened the subfloor, has softened the underlayment, and basically is now going to require a complete pullout. So the tenants are presumed that it is written into our contract. You have to tell us so we know in an early enough stage that we can deal with small problems before they become big problems. But at the same time, it is the landlord's responsibility to tackle and recognize and see small problems so that they don't become big problems, because there's a whole lot of difference between $300 and $3,000. And when you start talking about, you know, taking out a bathroom for somebody who's got a 2-bedroom, 1-bath, and you're putting their bathroom shut down for a period of 5 days, theoretically, you have to put them them up at a hotel or somewhere, because you're talking about habitability.
Right.
Not having a bathroom is a habitability.
Right, right.
Surprise.
Right.
So how do you get into the property in terms of making sure that the tenant, you notify the tenant, and the tenant allows you access?
Again, there's a law that governs this area. There's also what I wanted to mention is that it would be so beneficial if landlords and tenants were actually talking to each other, cultivating a good relationship so that you don't have this distrust. Because really, you know, both people are in this for the same reason, is that you want to make sure that the property is safe. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure that the tenant is, quote unquote, enjoying the benefits of living there. So, you know, with respect to going into the property, there is a code section in our law that limits the reasons for a landlord to be able to go in. And this is a situation, again, if you haven't been to a lawyer or you're not really sure about this, you might think that you could just go in at any time, and that is not true.
Show up at the door, say, hi, I'm here.
Can't do that.
Ah.
Sorry. So you can only go in if you are needing to make agreed upon or necessary repairs. Of course you can go in an emergency, but you can only go in to show the property to a prospective. For example, if it's for sale and you need to show the property to a buyer or something like that. But with respect to just day to day, the statute says that you can only go in for necessary and agreed upon repairs. Now there are ways to do this that you can make sure that you're going in to do, you know, for example, replacing a smoke alarm or doing some kind of a safety check. I mean, our clients that get a lot of government funding, they're always getting inspected by different government agencies, so then they have reason to go in, and it just makes it a lot easier if there's a way that you can have these regular inspections of the property, because again, dealing with something on the front end is a lot better than waiting until it's out of control. And going back to what I said before, if you have a tenant who trusts you, who is not afraid to just call you and, like you said, have this small problem, just deal with it. It'll be easy.
We're going to come back in just a moment. We're going to take a short break. We're on KSRO, Sonoma County's FM News Talk.
The Real Estate Hour with Mike Kelly. Mike will be right back with more on KSRO.
The Drive with Steve Jackson.
Local political analyst Pete Fabiano.
That was one of the big concerns that people had. That was changing the character of the town and orienting it more toward tourists.
Afternoons here on FM News Talk Radio, 103.5 and 94.5, KSRO.
If you're selling a home in Sonoma County, you know the fires have changed everything. It's more important than ever to have an agent who really knows the market. That's why you should call Mike Kelly.
It's a different landscape these days. You're dealing with insurance companies, lawyers, inspectors. I can help you get through all of this stuff and sell your home the right way with less hassle.
If you've been affected by the fires, you need the Mike Kelly difference. Let Mike use his Sonoma County resources and connections to get you through all the obstacles, and his market knowledge to help you set the right price.
There'll be a lot of homes coming on the market, so now's the time to list yours. Show me your home and I'll show you 3 quick and easy tips to maximize the return on your investment, even if you don't use me.
If you want the Mike Kelly difference, you've got to call Mike. Find Mike at MikeKelly.com or call Mike at 707-322-8503, 707-322-8503.
North Bay play-by-play home of the Golden State Warriors and Oakland Raiders. FM News Talk Radio, 103.5, 94.5, KSRO.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Hour with Mike Kelly on KSRO. Now, here's more with Mike.
Good morning, and I'm Keith Becker, covering for Mike, who's up in the mountains fishing today. With me is Michelle Zromsky of Zromsky Konasek Law Firm. In Friday's news, there was another article. Now, those who may not be familiar with Sonoma County or anything that's going on in the North Bay, we have had fires seemingly nonstop since last October. Last October, Penal Code 396 was instituted in the immediate aftermath of the Tubbs fire to prevent price gouging. And we've talked about this. I've talked about this previously when I was on the air with Mike. And I need to state that the district attorney's office is prosecuting people who are guilty of price gouging. And this is not just Sonoma County, although the Sonoma County DA is very, very aggressive on this, because some of the instances are really egregious. As I said, not just Sonoma County, the Marin County DA's office. There was an article in the news on Friday about a landlord, and this is what's really unconscionable, a landlord in association with the landlord's property manager, who had a property listing for $4,950 in Marin, which may sound like a decent price in Marin, and it was available immediately before the fire. On October 10th, while the fires were still going on, they raised the rent to $6,800. And then a little bit after that, raised it even higher to $9,500 before ultimately renting the property to someone at $7,700. In case you have any questions, this is a blatant example of price gouging. This is, as I said, unconscionable. And while a landlord, should actually be very aware of this, the problem and the situation that bothers me the most is that he had a professional property manager who actually encouraged, allowed, counseled, went along with this. And that is just, in this market, you need to know what your limits and your allowances are. And for practical purposes, the limits and allowances, with minor and few exceptions, the limits and allowances are 10% over what the rent was immediately prior to the fires. There are some minutiae associated with how that works. And again, as I said, you know, and have said repeatedly, you need to make sure that you've got your attorney's number, and you need to make sure that you've got it on speed dial. And lucky for me, we do have Michelle Zromsky with us, and we're going to talk about another aspect of landlord-tenant relations and landlord-tenant law, and one of the things that comes up when things start getting challenging. You have a rental contract, and yes, as we covered before, the rental contract is in writing. And the rental contract, let's just say, says that the rent is due on the 1st and is considered delinquent if not received by the 3rd. Here we are, it's the 5th or the 6th or the 8th, and the tenant hasn't paid the rent. What do you do? Show up at the door with your gun?
That's not a good idea, Keith.
This is not Texas.
Exactly. Yeah, no, we don't do a lot of criminal law. You were talking about the penal code section, and I would just echo your caution. Just be really, really careful on that. I mean, the DA is not messing around, and it's wrong to begin with. But okay, let's say your rent is within the allowable limits and the tenant is late and you haven't heard from the tenant. Again, you know, this goes back to the good communication, having communication. Maybe something happened that month, you know, they were in the hospital or something like that. But presuming there's no valid, legitimate excuse for that, what you need to do is serve something that's called a 3-day notice to pay rent or quit. And again, there's a statute that talks about what things need to be included in the notice. When people try to do them themselves, sometimes it doesn't work out too well because they leave out the information that is required to be in those notices. So, you know, you have your property manager or your lawyer help you with a 3-day notice to pay or quit. You can only ask for the rent that's due. You can't ask for late fees, things like that. So you would serve that notice on the tenant.
Just to be sure. So what you just said was, if you've got a piece of paper that says, it's a 3-day notice, you owe me as the landlord money, that one paper can only say you owe unpaid rent.
Correct.
Theoretically, if I wanted to, I could serve that piece of paper along with a different piece of paper that says you owe other costs, but they are two different documents. Is that also correct?
That's correct. And one of them is called a 3-day notice to pay rent or quit. The other one is called a three-day notice to perform covenants or quit. And the covenants that it refers to are the terms of the lease. In other words, the covenants, the promises in the rental agreement. And that goes back to, again, what we've been talking about. The benefits of having a written rental agreement are that you could tell the tenant, look, you need to do these things. You need to keep the property clean. You need to pay the late fee. Maybe there's some utilities that are owed. So anything other than rent that is the responsibility of the tenant that is in the rental agreement, and you need to ask the tenant to do that, you need to have that 3-day notice to perform or quit. Going back to what we were talking about before, if you need to get into the property for some reason, you, and assuming you have a properly drawn up rental agreement, you will have something in your rental agreement that says that the tenant needs to provide you with access under X, Y, and Z. And we've had situations where the tenant unreasonably refuses the access to the landlord, doesn't let the landlord come in, and the landlord does need to come in to see the property for whatever reason, to make repairs, to show it to an appraiser, something like that. Mm-hmm. You need to have something in writing that you can say, you have 3 days to allow us to do this. And so, again, that's the benefit of having a three-day rental agreement, is that you can serve a 3-day notice to perform or quit, asking the tenant to comply with one of the provisions of the rental agreement.
How, if you write something up, how do you have to get it to them?
So again, there are specified ways of doing what's called serving it on the note on the tenant. A lot of times the landlords mistakenly think that you could email something to the tenant. Don't do that. You can't do that under the for the notices that we're talking about.
Emailing, texting.
No. For a 3-day notice to pay rent or quit, or a 3-day notice to perform or quit, the landlord or the property manager needs to either A, personally hand it to the tenant, or do what's called post and mail. And that means you post it on the front door, you tape it, you affix it to the front door, and then you drop it in the mail that same day.
So if you basically, like, your intention is you don't want to embarrass the tenant, so you want to slip it under the door, you put it in their mail slot, because after all, putting it right in the center of their door is potentially embarrassing to them. Are you jeopardizing your situation by doing that?
Yes, that doesn't comply with the statute. Again, you know, sometimes landlords might not understand why we're telling them something, but we're really not making this up. You know, we're looking at what the law specifically says, and the law tells you this is what you have to have in your notice. This is how you have to deliver it to the landlords. And, you know, sometimes landlords will come up with ingenious ways that they are trying to deliver it, but it's really invalid service and you'll have to start over. So just comply with what the specific requirements of the law regarding methods of service are, and you'll be fine. Don't try to make it up.
Don't try to fudge this or make it up as you go along. Do I understand, if I remember correctly, we have always had this, but basically it is now required in a 3-day notice that you have to identify a named individual, not just, for example, you know, you owe your rent to Dee Dee's Rentals, but now our 3-day notices say, you know, you have to pay to an individual. Is that correct?
Well, you have to say who the rent. Yes, that's correct. Who the rent is to be payable to. So the rent will be payable to, and we put in the name of the landlord, whoever's designated on your rental agreement, and then the notice will tell them where to pay it, how to pay it, what hours of the day that someone will be available. If they're available personally, it will say what hours of the day they're available to receive it.
You know, Michelle, we had a long list of items, and I figured we'd have plenty of time, and here we are, we're coming up to the end of the show. Michelle, if somebody wants to contact you, how would they do so?
So we are located downtown Santa Rosa. Our phone number is 707-542-1393.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you, Keith.
Yeah.
You've been listening to the longest-running real estate talk show in the North Bay, The Real Estate Hour with Mike Kelly. Join Mike every Sunday morning at 9 for tips on buying and selling your home. Call in and ask your questions direct. Don't forget to check in daily with The Real Estate Hour's official blog at therealestatehourblog.com. Mike Kelly on The Real Estate Hour, Sunday mornings on KSRO and KSRO.com.
The preceding was a paid presentation.
FM News Talk, KSRO, K278 CD, Santa Rosa.